Jai. Jai Gaur, Jai Nitai. Puri Dhame Borshe, Kintu Ek Chakra Dhame Kripa Patsi. Nitai Pada Kamala, Koti Chandra Shushitala, Ta Kripai. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If it is at all appropriate to speak about myself, if, that's a big question in itself, but if it's at all appropriate to speak about myself, I suppose it's during this festival when you're all gathered here with the idea that it's around the time of my birthday, although we don't know exactly when my birthday was according to the specific time. We have a day, date and year, but we can't work it out according to Titi, so we just do it whenever we feel like it. I don't really feel like it myself that much, but anyway, it's going on. But before I speak about myself, I'm going to speak about Marcus Tullius Cicero. You've all heard of him? Tapavit Prabhu has heard of him. He's nodding his head. What, so, who is he? What, why, when, where? Well, I'll tell you. I'll read from the, I think it's from the Wikipedia thing. He was a Roman statesman, lawyer, scholar, philosopher, writer, and academic skeptic, whatever that means, who tried to uphold optimate principles, whatever that means, during the political crises that led to the establishment of the Roman Empire. His extensive writings include treatises on rhetoric, philosophy, and politics. So he was a huge figure in history, but why mention him at all in this assembly? Shvavidvara hoshtra karai sangstuta purusha pashahu nayat karna pato peto jatu nama gadagrajaha. This is a verse that Srila Prabhupada often quoted from the second canto of Bhagavatam, which says that men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses praise persons upon whose tongue the name of Krishna never comes. So it's big animals being praised by smaller animals. So according to this analysis of Srimad Bhagavatam, Marcus Tullius Cicero was a Roman statesman, lawyer, blah, 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 but he fell in the category of a dog, hog, camel, or ass. So why am I talking about him? His birthday is still known. It's given as the 3rd of January, 1006 B.C., before Christ. Of course, in those times, they weren't using the present, this kind of calendar, because that, I suppose they were using the Julian calendar, or maybe that even came later, but we're using the Gregorian calendar. So anyway, it's the 3rd of January. So that is the date which is in my birth certificate, 3rd of January, but quite a bit later than Cicero. So, okay, still, so what? Okay, well, I'm just saying this because a godbrother who's an astrologer who's very interested in birthdays, he sent me this information that this Cicero is born on the 3rd of January, and I'm also born on the 3rd of January, according to my birth certificate, but you can't be sure. because who knows, it might have been 11:57 on the 2nd of January, and whatever they, what do they recall as being the time of birth anyway? Because is it the moment that your head comes out, or the moment your feet comes out, or when the, what's that thing called, the cord is cut? I don't know. So anyway, what am I talking about him for? Well, the point, oh, another thing. J.R.R. Tolkien was also born on January the 3rd. And those from our generation, from the Western countries, we've definitely heard of him. Most of you haven't. Don't worry, you didn't lose anything. So, but these are big figures in history. For someone to have his profile still known in the Western world after more than 2,000 years, he has to be a very, very big figure in history. Of course, in the Vedic and Puranic history, we have figures going back millions of years, but then the Western historians and pretty much everyone else doesn't even believe that there was anyone alive even millions of years ago. Maybe Homo something us. Prior to Homo sapiens, there were different Homo this and Homo that, and eventually Homo sapiens. We think we're intelligent, so we awarded ourselves the name Homo sapiens. But anyway, here's a big figure, Cicero, and he was born on the 3rd of January. But where is he now? Where is he now? Fly buzzing around here. Get the fly out. Is that Cicero? An imaginary fly. It's a device. Srila Prabhupada sometimes did that. I just heard yesterday Nara Narayan saying about this ant. See that ant? So Nara Narayan didn't know what to say because he couldn't see an ant and he didn't want to contradict Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, we should think how to benefit. If we think how to benefit this ant, our Krishna consciousness movement is successful. So in the same way, the imaginary fly could be Cicero. Could be. Where is he now? He might have gone back to Godhead if he got the mercy of the Vaishnavas in between. But more likely, he's still working off the karma. In the lower species, he's still working off the karma that he had as Cicero. J.R.R. Tolkien, big figure, literary figure, he's also dead. Where is he now? We don't know. So many people are born and die, billions of humans have been born and died since Cicero was born and died, and unlimited billions of living beings, billions, there's not even any word. Well, there is a word, ananta, uncountable, eta brahmanda bhari, ananta jivagon, chaurasi lakha jonite koreye brahman. Unlimited living beings are circulating within this one little Brahmanda. This is, we're in one Brahmanda, one egg of Brahma, one universe. And this is the smallest universe. If we see all the universes, we might not even notice this one. It's so small. And there, within this universe, there are unlimited, uncountable living beings rotating within 8,400,000 species of life. So why do we give so much importance to anyone? We're all insignificant. But I can say, I am more important than Cicero. than Tolkien. I am more important. Now it got to my head, all of you coming and listening to me and calling me your guru, it went to my head. But in other words, I'm becoming egoistic. But it's just a realistic assessment that by Srila Prabhupada's grace, I'm more important, or anyone who chants Hare Krishna, even once, is more important than all the big figures of this world. Day before yesterday, I was walking on the beach, chanting japa, and just beside us was one of those mangy dogs, which also are part of the population of Puri. You've probably noticed them. And I just said to the devotees walking with me that this birth as a, what a condemned birth as a dog. Of course, you're born as a dog in the Western countries, then you're a highly prized citizen. If you're born as a dog in China, then you'll be someone's lunch. Here in India, the dogs, now it's changing, of course, because Indians are so stupid. They're giving up their own culture and imitating the Western Mlecha culture. So they also have dog shows here and expensive dogs. But generally dogs, they just wander around and mangy and covered in sores, and people throw them a little biscuit or something, some fish pakora, something. So I mentioned that it's the dog born in Puri is more fortunate than the Bill Gates born in America. Because he's in the Dham, he gets little prasad here and there. He's maybe gets to see Jagannath even, gets to see the Vaishnavas, gets to hear the holy name. The holy names are being chanted. We're going for Harinam Sankirtan here this afternoon. We're planning on that. But it's nothing unusual in Puri. If we were to do so in Chattanooga, in the United States, which state is that? Missouri? Tennessee. Okay. It would be something unusual, probably. I don't know if devotees are regularly going out on Harinam Sankirtan in Chattanooga. No, they're not. Okay, it's not so far from Atlanta. Put it in your portfolio. But here it's a regular thing. It's maybe not so many as we plan to have, but it's a regular thing. In fact, I think pretty much daily there's a group goes out chanting Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham, etc. They have one major mart here. So the dog in Puri is better situated than the than anyone in a human birth or any birth in the Western world. Of course, Bill Gates, so we've heard, there is a story going around that at some point he donated some money to the devotees. There's a story like that. That someone came to Steve Jobs, and probably most young Indians have heard of him. They may not have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they've heard of Steve Jobs. So there's a story going around that a devotee approached him once and approached Steve Jobs, and Steve Jobs gave 1,000 rupees donation. And then he told Bill Gates to also give 1,000 rupees. $1,000. So a story is going around like that. Because Steve Jobs, when he was an indigent hippie making his first computers, used to take prasad regularly with the devotees. So we're told. So, getting back to me, talking about me. Yeah, I am very important. So many of you are coming to me. But that's because we're all of you are very important because you're all getting the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. We're all getting that mercy. Anyone who gets that mercy, they're not considered very important in the Karmi society. But Nityananda Prabhu says, Bhaja Gauranga Kaha Gauranga Laha Gauranga Namre Jajan Gauranga Bhaja Shemar Pranre. Nityananda Prabhu says, anyone who says the name of Gauranga, worships Gauranga, makes Gauranga their life, that devotee, Nityananda says, is my life. And although most people in the world haven't heard of Nityananda and they're not very interested to hear of him, he's infinitely more important than all the important people who are considered important by men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses. Nityananda is ananta, he's unlimited. So don't be disappointed if your guru doesn't have so many followers. There are big, big gurus with so many followers. They're very prominent. But they're bogus. So what? If someone makes a big name for himself posing as a guru, but he's bogus, then it's again a case of Shravidvara Hoshtra Karai, praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. There are so many useless people. There'll always be more cheaters than bona fide sadhus. And both will criticize each other. But it's the duty of the aspiring transcendentalist to see who is real. Anyone can call themselves Sadguru. Someone has appropriated the title Sadguru as if he's the only one. But it's the duty of the aspiring transcendentalist to see what is real and what is not real. I can't claim to be a topmost devotee, but I have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada regarding whom? Regarding whom Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prophecy that he would send a Senapati Bhakta, a great militaristic, as if militaristic, leader to spread his glories all over the world. So I have a relationship with him as a spiritual son. Srila Prabhupada, in a conversation, he said, Srila Prabhupada said, there is an Indian proverb, Baap ka beta, shepahi ka goda, kuch nahi to tora. Kuch nahi to tora tora. And Srila Prabhupada explained it, that the father's son and the soldier's horse, they acquire the quality, if not all, some. Srila Prabhupada went on to say, if one is a good soldier, His horse is also trained up. There is a history in India that the horse has become heroic. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the Queen of Jhansi, Jhansi Rani, and Shivaji. Their horses in the battle have become heroic. They played some role, Srila Prabhupada didn't elaborate, in which the horse has become praised for their heroic role, because the rider of the horse is a hero, then the horse has also gained that quality. So Srila Prabhupada said, it is an animal, but because it is the horse of a famous hero, it has played like that. Similarly, the son of the father must be as good as the father, if not to some extent. So, I am connected with Srila Prabhupada. You're all connected with Srila Prabhupada. And at least to some extent, something should have rubbed off. That's an English saying. There should be some influence. There should be some influence of Srila Prabhupada there. Srila Prabhupada is so great. And some influence must be there. Something is there. So, again, I can't claim to be a topmost devotee, but I know who is. And I try to represent him. And of course, Srila Prabhupada is the representative of all the acharyas. All the acharyas' teachings he gave in his books. I'm telling you to read this book and that book. Srila Prabhupada gave so many books. He gave the distillation of all the acharya's commentaries in his books. We may not be able to read so many books are there. Different acharya's commentaries. We were hearing from Tattvavit Prabhu about the contributions of Kobi Karnapur. Everyone can't sit down and read so many books. But if we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we get the essence of everything. I'm not saying not to read other books, but we can be satisfied that, as Srila Prabhupada himself says about Bhagavad, well, it's right there. Kemanyai Shastra Vistarai. Even by reading Bhagavad Gita alone, even if we don't read so many other things, simply by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, we can get everything we need to know and go back to Godhead. So, Srila Prabhupada is the representative of all the previous acharyas, and every guru should be the representative of the previous acharyas. Sarvadeva Mayo Guru. So I try to represent Srila Prabhupada by practice and precept. That means doing as he said to do and teaching what he taught. Intrinsically, I am unworthy, but that is the great mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he passes down in his sampradaya. Dino hino jato chilo harinaame udharilo. Those who are most fallen, they can be picked up, they are picked up by the mercy of the holy name given by the pure devotees. I am intrinsically unworthy, but I am aware of the responsibility to, at least somewhat aware of the responsibility to represent Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. So I try to do that. That is my, this much I can say, that I try to represent Srila Prabhupada. And every disciple, that's his basic duty, to follow and represent his guru. You should find out a guru who's linked with the absolute truth. We start off with Brahma Jignyasa, inquiring about the absolute truth. And then we should find out who knows that. If we're going to find out, how are we going to find out? What is the nature of Brahma? What is the nature of the absolute truth? We have to find out someone who knows. And then it's not just a matter of telling us, but it's a matter of realizing, because Brahma, the absolute truth, cannot be realized simply by reading about it. Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo, nor by talking about it, even in a very learned way. One may be very learned and speak so many things, so many deep things, which sound very attractive, but the realization comes by mercy. That mercy is awakened in the heart, by which we can understand all the truths that the gurus tell us when we accept the role of a disciple. Guru Mukha Padma Vaka Chitete Korea Aika Ana Korihomane Asha. Then, when we have this attitude that, as Arjuna said to Krishna, Sarvam Etad Ritang Manye Yang Mang Vadasi Keshava, I accept all that you say as true. When we accept that and live that, live according to that, then Dibya Gyan Hriday Prakashito. Then the transcendental knowledge which is in Shastra becomes awakened in our heart. That's stated also, or that is a short version of the Yasya Deve Parabhakti Yata Deve Tata Guru Tasyaite Katita Hyarta Prakashante Mahatmana. That those who have firm faith in their guru and Yasya Deve Parabhakti Yata Deve Tata and in Bhagavan, then for such a person, all the truths of the Shastra are awakened within the heart. So understanding, as Srila Prabhupada said, means standing under, becoming a humble servant. And really, that's all we have to be. That's all we have to be a humble servant. It seems very difficult. It may seem very difficult for us because we're used to having the attitude, Ishvaroham aham bhogi, the demoniac attitude, life after life, we have the attitude, let me be in the center, let me be God, let me be the enjoyer. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. But by relinquishing that attitude and realizing Jivaya Surupoi Krishna Nitya Das, I am simply a servant of Krishna, then our real spiritual life begins. But Jivaya Surupoi Krishna Nitya Das, our constitutional position is as a servant of Krishna. But Krishna tells us how to serve Him. He gives the system. He himself describes to Uddhava how the gurus are to be seen as good as him, to be served, especially the brahmacharis, brahmachari gurukule vasandanto guru nhitam, dasavan acharan nicho suhrida, guru suhrida sohrida. The brahmacharis, they live in the ashram of the guru, like slaves, this word das can be translated, it means servant, can be translated as like a slave. There's no, the English word slave doesn't exactly translate into any Sanskrit term. There's no exact synonym. But the closest word is das. But that's also used for servant. It can be a servant of God also. So the brahmachari serves with this attitude of being very humble, very lowly, submissive, with affection for the guru. That's also, it's not just a matter of serving as a duty, but with affection, thinking of the guru as one's great benefactor. Now, this is the attitude Srila Prabhupada said, or he wrote in one letter to Upendra, one of his disciples. Srila Prabhupada wrote, "Your strong desire to serve me is very beautiful. Your serving me means serving Krishna. I," Srila Prabhupada said, "am also your servant, so I cannot accept your service from you." Srila Prabhupada said, "It's very nice that you're serving me, but I can't accept your service." Srila Prabhupada went on, "I can't accept service from any of my disciples." But then Srila Prabhupada said, "I accept service from my disciples on behalf of Krishna. Just like a tax collector must collect for the treasury, not for himself. If he himself touches so much as a farthing, it would be unlawful. So I have no right to accept service from any disciple, but on behalf of Krishna, I can accept. Sincere service to the spiritual master is service to the Supreme Lord." As stated in the prayer, "Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadah." That means because Krishna accepts service through the via media of the spiritual master, therefore, pleasing the spiritual master is equal to pleasing the Supreme Lord. This is the basic philosophical understanding. Srila Prabhupada's universally recognized as a, as he wrote about his own guru, Shai Shai Mahanta Guru, Jagatair, Madhyayuru, Krishna Bhakti, Dei Tai Tai. He said about his own guru, and certainly it applies to himself, that he is a high level, very high level guru, very, very great in the world, very high, giving Krishna bhakti here and there, spreading Krishna consciousness everywhere. So Srila Prabhupada is universally recognized as a very powerful guru. About myself, I can say that having learned from Srila Prabhupada and having taken from him the order to instruct others to do so, to tell them about Krishna, that I know where we should be going, and I know the process to go there. So, with my disciples, I can say, let us make the journey together. With myself as a more experienced traveler on the path, taking the role of a spiritual teacher to the world. We are enjoined to do so, to distribute that which we have received. The world in general is not very interested, but still it is our duty to try to awaken an interest in the uninterested. The spark of Krishna consciousness is there in the heart of every living being, and it is the duty of those who have received the causeless mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the parampara system. It is their duty to try to give that causeless mercy to others. And speaking about myself, before receiving Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I was thinking, what to do, what to do? Looking around, at school I looked around and everyone's going to university or getting a job. I was thinking, what's the point? All these people are miserable, so why should I do what they're doing? Why should I follow what they're doing? So I knew everything that I didn't want to do, which was everything that I could think of, and everything that everyone else could think of, but I didn't know what I was meant to do. So I thought, well, somehow or other I should find out what's the best possible thing I can do, but nothing seemed to be worthwhile. What's the point of doing anything? And then that thing I used to hear about in my childhood, about God, yeah, there should be God. Don't think it's in the church, whatever it is, but if you could find out God, that should be the best thing. Where, how, why, no idea. But there should be God somewhere. So how to find Him? No idea. No idea? Srila Prabhupada has the idea. And then I got Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. And I still didn't have an idea, but I had an idea that someone has an idea, so I should go and check it out, which I did. And it seemed to me to be a good idea. Looking back, probably in old age, now I'm entering old age, you look back and think, well, all the things I could have done. But if I look back and think, I wouldn't want to have done anything else but have come to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So many other things I could have done. Nothing else meaningful, worthwhile, of any importance. Even how I live my life within Srila Prabhupada's movement. There are so many things I could have done. Sometimes I think I should have learned Sanskrit. Sometimes I think I should have learned Telugu or Oriya, but I didn't. It's a bit late now. Some of the young Western devotees, they could learn Indian languages, because still that dancing white elephant principle still works. So anyone, you have to have a white skin. It's not enough to be from the West. You have to have a white skin. If you can learn an Indian language and preach, it'll be very attractive. As Srila Prabhupada told his one disciple, Bhagavat Das, who was in Orissa, in Bhuvaneshwar. He told him, if you learn Odia, the local language here, local language means this state, about, I don't know, 60 million people maybe. If you learn this language and preach, thousands of people will come and fall at your feet. So if you want people falling at your feet, it's not that much fun actually. But if you want, you can direct them in the right path. You can have a great life ahead of you if you dedicate your life in this way. Of course, there's so much work to do in the Western countries also. And in some ways, again, talking about myself, I'm thinking, though I spent most of this life here in India, that the preaching is much developed here. Of course, there's so much more to do, unlimited more work to do. But I'm thinking maybe to spend more time in the West. When I first came to India, the movement was not really in gear. It was a great struggle in so many ways. The movement in the West was flourishing, and now it's vice versa. So I'm thinking like that, maybe to spend more time in the West. Let's see. One thing before I joined Srila Prabhupada's movement, I was staying for a little time in a Christian monastery. Just kind of hanging around. I wasn't just looking at it, and they let me stay. Cistercians, vegetarians. So there was one book I was going through they had in their library called The Lives of the Saints. Little mini biographies. The Catholic, when I say Christian monastery, it was Catholic monastery. So they have so many saints who double up as demigods. It's like in Vedic religion, we have the demigod of the rain, the demigod of the fire, and the demigod who's worshipped by artisans, the Vishvakarma is worshipped by blacksmiths, and so on and so on and so on. So like that, they have Catholic saints, and then you have the saint of travelers. I remember is Saint Christopher, because we used to have a picture of Saint Christopher in the car, just like you have in India. There are pictures of some deity in the car. So there's a patron saint of this, pretty much everything. There are so many Catholic saints. So I was reading the mini biographies of the saints. And I read of one of them that he was sent to a monastery in his youth, which in what's called the Middle Ages or Dark Ages or Middle Ages in Europe, if anyone was to get an education, they would be sent to the monastery, a formal education to learn to read and write. It was the universal education where everyone is sent to learn to read and write. Not everyone does, but most people can read and write. But that's only a recent phenomenon, because the big nasty people who are making lots of money needed an educated populace to do all their technical work and to fit into their technological society. And it's easier to brainwash people also if they're all educated. If they can read and write, then you can mass media and this and that. So anyway, few people you could read and write. Mostly the leaders of the states in Europe, they couldn't read or write. Prince Charles, now King Charles, he was the first monarch or monarch to be in British history whoever went to university. They were more intelligent. They know you don't need a university degree, you're already going to be the king. What do you need a university degree for? So anyway, one saint, I can't remember who it was sent to the monastery to learn to read and write, and they're supposed to be acolyte monks, seminarians, brahmacharis, I guess it's something equivalent to being a brahmachari. So most of what was written in that biography is that most of the boys who were sent there, they weren't very serious about studies or God or the monastic life. They were sent there and have to pass our time. But this particular one who later became a monk, he was very serious about his studies and about the whole concept of worshipping God. And I thought, if I ever get the opportunity, which at the time I didn't expect, if I ever get the opportunity to be in a situation where there is a monastery where people are really centered on God. Of course, the monastery where I was staying, they were centered on God. But I was already disenchanted by the Christian conception of God. And I knew that they didn't know God because they had a wrong idea. Of course, my thoughts weren't very solidified at the time. But the idea that God sends you to hell forever didn't work. Didn't work in my mind. That can't be God. So when I heard about reincarnation, because growing up in England in those days, we didn't even hear, we didn't even know about the concept of reincarnation at all. So when I heard about it, that makes sense. Then there can be God. He gives you chance after chance after chance. So I was disillusioned with the concept of God in Christianity. But anyway, I thought, let me see these monks, because they're very serious. Their Mangalarti, not exactly, but that began at 3:15 every morning before us. They didn't bathe, but every morning they were up and chanting together from 3:15 in the morning. So they were very serious about it. But then, of course, when I asked them questions about God, they didn't have any answers, so I was disappointed. But anyway, the point I got from this was that if I ever get the association of people who know who is God, who can show me the path to God, I'm going to take it seriously, like this saint. So that stuck with me. If I'm fortunate enough to find that, I should take it very seriously. We all should. I didn't know, I didn't think it was possible that there could be people who knew the path to God, knew who is God, and who can show the way, and who are really living it very seriously. But then I got that book, and I read it. I couldn't understand much, but I understood there was something serious. Or it looks like there's something serious. So I thought it's my duty to at least check it out. I was still doubtful that anyone could even live up to these high ideals. But I also knew I couldn't make any progress on my own. So then I went to visit the temple of Radha Gokula Ananda near London. And in retrospect, I should have probably been more inquisitive, but just immediately, not exactly immediately, but after some discussion and seeing the devotees, how happy they are how austere they are. It means they're not living this life, they're not having any material comforts. That I understood they're in it for real. And I'm not going to get anything better. I can't imagine anything better than this, so okay, I'm going into it. And seriously. So that's a little bit about myself. And I'll finish there for now. Hare Krishna. And see you all. Again, we can say, where is the venue for the Harinam Sankirtan? You can announce again. I don't need to know. I lead a privileged life. I'll be taken there. I don't have to find my own way. So where is it? Sarichar Bhajai, 4:30.